Thanks for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoy it. The show notes are included in the summary for each episode. Notes can be accessed from the Mobile Marketing Podcast link at the top and bottom of the dominoresearch.com website. If you like the podcast, please take a moment to help us out. Rate and review us on your preferred medium. We are currently available on iTunes, Google Play Podcast, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Thank you. Hey there, and welcome to the latest episode of Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy, the podcast that helps you navigate the ever-changing landscape of mobile marketing.
The dark side of influencer marketing, how the FTC standards are now in full effect with social media influencers, why it was needed, and influencer rates and best practices of what you do past the ROI itself.
Hi there, I'm Kim Stewart.
And I'm Hazel Fruitman, and today we're going to discuss the dark side of influencer marketing. You know how the FTC standards are now in full effect with social media influencers, why it was needed, and influencer rates and best practices.
So we'll go through how any business can spot fake accounts so you can tell if the influencer you are contemplating hiring to endorse your product has an authentic following. And we'll talk a bit about your strategy that you can use to see how your likes and follows are going to grow and what you do to take it from there. So with that, we want all our listeners to know how we spend a considerable amount of time working with small to medium-sized businesses daily. And most of these businesses have fairly slim budgets to work with, so they really find a good ROI in using social media influencers when that's being done properly. You know, just slapping a post on an Instagram feed or on a TikTok video, that's not going to accomplish all that much without some sort of an underlying strategy. And today we're going to talk a bit about the sort of underbelly of what it takes to work with reputable influencers. But before we do that, let's have a quick talk about what mobile marketing is and how our platform does it. I'm going to turn it over to Hazel for that.
Mobile wallet campaigns are incredibly effective marketing collateral when you set them up correctly and implement them in a way that increases engagement with customers, prospects, referrals, and so on. In a nutshell, a mobile wallet campaign consists of a mobile wallet pass that's added to individual phones. iPhones use Apple Wallet, which is native iOS application. And Android phones use any of a number of third-party apps to achieve the same goals. The pass has two sides, the front and the back. The front of the pass is like a digital calling card. It normally has the name of your product or business, perhaps a tagline or logo, and should be styled to complement your existing logo and collateral. We can include a QR code and a barcode on the front of the pass if you're interested in tracking users via the passes, although the tracking default does not contain any personal information unless we have created a customized solution for you. The front of the pass should be designed to get someone's attention, colorful maybe, or with a unique tagline or similar. It requires a very simple, clean design since most phone screens are not that big. The back of the pass is where the magic happens, as I like to call it. And this is the area of the pass where you're really going to be able to get your message out there and include some very efficient calls to action that result in quantifiable results. The structure of the mobile wallet pass means that everything on the back that is formatted in a way that the phone recognizes, like a phone number, an address, a URL, a link to iTunes or YouTube, and so on. Those apps are actually launched when the user taps a link on the back of the pass. What that means in real terms is that if you're promoting your podcast, you can send your subscribers a lock screen notification and they have the ability to tap the back links and your podcast will start playing in the correct app, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, or whatever. It also means that if you're a realtor, for instance, and you include the address of a property you're promoting, a prospective buyer can tap the address on the back of the pass, launch maps, complete with driving directions. Tap to call, tap to email, tap to launch social media apps like Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and others. These are simply handled by the wallet app, and there's no coding or formatting involved. It really couldn't be any easier. Passes can be shared through a variety of means. The most popular method is including the pass URL as a link or in a print ad as a type in request using a browser. Other ways include the share function on the pass, having someone open Apple Wallet or scan the QR code directly, or even sending the pass via iMessages or email from the phone. Last but not least, the passes include location and proximity targeting features, which means that using the geofencing and location awareness that's built into smartphone offers you the ability to send lock screen notifications based on where someone is, as well as sending them time-based, or what we like to call static messages. You've probably seen this at the airport if you're having a boarding pass in your Apple Wallet on iPhone, for instance. When you get close to the security screening checkpoint, the boarding pass automatically pops up on your lock screen, and you don't have to search for it or open the app or unlock the phone to see it. So there you have it, the 2-minute rundown on just what and how a mobile pass works, where it goes in the iPhone, and what it can do.
Awesome. Thanks, Hayes. So for anybody out there who wants to learn more about how these mobile strategies work, we have a few episodes for you to listen to. The first one that comes to my mind is episode 83, which is crafting your story to compel shoppers. So if you're in the business of selling things, whether that's a product or a service, you have probably heard at least a million times that having a good story is what makes the difference in whether or not people will actually buy what you are trying to sell them.
Right. And yeah, some of my all-time favorites is one of them is episode 56, Bridging the Gap Between Strategy and Execution in Mobile Marketing. It's a crucial step in making sure your campaigns are well-designed and to make sure that they get the results you're looking for without sacrificing quality with quantity.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And you know what? Let's not forget number 78, how to integrate CTAs for more mobile engagement. You know, it's critical to a successful campaign, learning how and where to insert your calls to action. And these can really make the difference in an outstanding ROI versus flat results that really don't prove to be worth the investment in time and money. You know, over the last few years, social media has kind of brought with it new ways to make money over the internet. You know, more than ever previously, kind of, depends on what industry you're in, I guess. The thing about it is this is using influencers, which are popular accounts who have tons of followers and lots of engagement, likes, comments. You know, this is a situation where a pay-to-post really could get you your money's worth.
Right. And with it, the success of self-made influencers has inspired a huge number of people to try and break into the industry. However, this has led to like intense competition for followers, attention, engagement, and sponsorship deals, especially in the crowded sectors of fashion and beauty. So as such, a number of creators have resorted to underhand tactics and blatant lies to try and stand out from the competition, and this is known as influencer fraud. Right, Kim?
Absolutely. Sorry, I was just checking on something. You know, I was watching, speaking of influencer fraud,
yes.
I was watching that Hulu documentary the other night about the Fyre Festival, you know, that right. Complete and total train wreck in the Bahamas. And we can talk some more about that as we go through this episode. But right. I just wanted to take just a second to look up and see. So one of the primary social media influencer companies that the Fyre guys had engaged in their whole process was a company that has an Instagram account called Fuck Jerry. And 14.5 right. million followers. And Fuck Jerry is really just a promo account for a company who's figured out how to get attention on social media. So these guys are the real deal though. And, you know, we can look at when we talk about influencer fraud, Some influencers artificially boost their follower numbers by paying for bot followers, or they use bots or other software to do sort of en masse engagement and growth. And, you know, then they unfollow all these people soon after that. I mean, you see it across all of the demographics. It doesn't matter if it's art, music, beauty, glamour, you know, whatever it is, it's there. And, you know, other people, other companies have gone so far as to fake paid partnership deals with big brands to try and make it appear that there's a big buzz around their channel in hope that, you know, other brands will notice them and be like, oh, well, if you're working with partner A, why don't you come work with us? And that they'll end up with real deals. I mean, and you know, some of these guys are pretty slick, but if you know what you're looking for, most of the time you can spot these tactics, which will reduce your risk.
Right. I mean, it's estimated that influencer marketing is now worth more than $1.5 billion worldwide. And the Association of National Advertisers found that 75% of marketers currently work with influencers. And so with this level of money being spent, influencer fraud presents a serious problem for both brands and influencers. So it affects genuine influencers too. So who's those who risk only their reputation being tarnished by negative associations within the industry, but also the opportunity to get paid sponsorship deals if they're being given to those with fake followings instead. So for brands, the goal of reaching genuine customers to sell a product is obviously significantly diminished if an influencer's followers are diluted with bot accounts, making it impossible to show a strong ROI on campaigns.
Well, you know, strangely enough, and that's just, it's a huge number. You know, yeah. SMBs are putting most of their marketing budget, it appears, into, you know, sort of hedging their bets by using several different influencers at the same time to try to extend their target reach. Right. And we'll go back to like Fyre Festival.
Yes.
The estimate that the Kendall Jenner post alone, just the one post from Kendall Jenner, was somewhere in the neighborhood of a $250,000 post.
That's right.
You know, it's just, it's totally crazy how, and using Fyre Festival, it's a really great example because, you know, Fuck Jerry was the company who did the orange squares that all those different influencers posted all day long that day. Was just the orange square. And we can talk more about that in a little bit, but you know, the lack of accountability and due diligence on the influencer side, as well as the agency side, has led to, you know, smaller cases being prosecuted of false advertising. And Fyre Festival was definitely one that broke the camel's back in making influencers be accountable for the claims that they were promoting.
Right, and this has prompted the FTC to take action, get involved. They've released tips for social media influencers and small businesses. You know, it's called Disclosures 101 for Social Media Influencers and can be found at ftc.gov/influencer. And for companies who want to dive into influencer marketing, there's a business guide called the Consumer Review Fairness Act, and it's what businesses need to know.
Well, you know, it's kind of an odd situation that it was the Fyre Festival that finally got the FTC's attention.
Right.
Especially given that affiliate marketing online, and we've done a number of articles and probably at least one podcast episode that included some conversation about the FTC cracking down on affiliates failing to disclose that they were being paid if somebody made a purchase, you know, via their URL links and stuff like that. And then now here you've got, instead of, okay, this is affiliate marketing, this is just straight out paid to post marketing, which how you could ever believe that this wasn't going to be subject to the same terms and conditions that the FTC had already laid down for affiliates. I mean, you know, and such a proliferation of products that really, those gold leaf eye masks, what about that shit? Right? But yeah, it's amazing how many health and beauty products make claims out there over the social media platforms. And it's just not like Instagram, it's like Twitter, and it's on YouTube especially.
Right, and the FDA, who also should be on them, doesn't mess with them very much.
This is true. So like, you know, goes with it again, the Fry Festival, which kickstarted, you know, the discussion over the ethics and accountability of social influencers, brands, and the marketing agencies. For us being in tech for so many years, as we're mentioning, we see a deeper reflection on the current era of tech-driven culture and of social values. So it'll be interesting, at least for me anyway, to see how many consumers react to this reevaluation of the role that technology plays and if there's a shift in consumer attention or not. Will it make a difference?
Okay, so let me just, like I say, since I just watched the documentary the other night, I was doing some work on my Clubhouse, as we are now calling the new home office renovation that I am taking the guest room and turning it into. Although you still will have a place to stay whenever you're at my house, don't worry. So I'm watching this documentary about the Fyre Festival. And the Fyre Festival was started by some hinky guy who came from basically the shadiest of the shady, sort of millennial, entitled internet affiliate marketing, scam this, scam that. Yeah. He had like a payments platform sort of scam for a while.
Yeah.
Got Ja Rule to partner up with him. Like say he got people like Kendall Jenner to influence bunches of models. He flew them all over to the Bahamas. They shot a video. This guy came out of nowhere. They hired Fuck Jerry and they literally made this crazy social media storm about this music festival that was supposed to be happening in the Bahamas. And the funny part about this is I saw maybe like a month ago, a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. There's a series on Netflix, which you know I don't watch Netflix because I don't like their net neutrality thing. But anyway, it was on the United app for in-flight entertainment. And I was flying at about 12 hours of total flight time. So I watched this other sort of documentary that was about three different internet companies back in the late 1990s. It was Netscape and theglobe.com. I know you remember those two. And this other one, Pixelon. Sure. And Pixelon was this complete and total video scam. And they had this big giant party, spent half their VC money on this big giant party. And it turned out that their VCs were trying to scam them. And the guy who owned Pixelon was on the lam from the law and he wasn't even using his real name. And then I was trying to remember who was the name of the company that had that big ass party with one of the payment processors in 2000. Like literally 20 years ago, right now, today, 20 years ago, we're recording this on the 7th of January. And in my Facebook memories, up pops a picture from the Vegas show in January of 2000. So it's 20 years ago. And these guys had the show that had David Lee Roth.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you remember that, but anyway. No, these guys never did anything. They had a fucking party and that was the end of it. All their money was blown. They had no real video technology. They came hot on the heels of Pixelon. And now here we are 20 years later, you've got this Fyre Festival thing that's the same sort of deal. I mean, it's literally just fraud. I mean, the Fyre Festival was billed as sort of a glamorous party on a deserted island owned by... Oh, what's his name? The Colombian drug lord dude. Pablo Escobar. Yeah. You know, it had Kendall Jenner, Bella Hadid, you know, Hailey Bieber, although she was still Baldwin back then. And, you know, Billy McFarland, who is the scammer guy that did the whole thing. You know, he went to jail. Yeah. He owes tons and tons of money.
Yeah.
And the video from that was on the documentary, holy hells, how hilarious. I mean, like these were like prison sandwiches that people were served on this island.
Yeah. And with these like white tents.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah. Porta potties. And people paying like $20,000 a ticket for that crap.
Right. And apparently the suitcases all came on a this big shipment.
Yeah, like in a container shipment, like it was the way they send stuff to Hawaii on the race for the boats so they don't have to carry it on their race pilots. It was all crazy shit.
It was crazy. I know you wouldn't have gone.
Well, you know, it's the funny thing is Billy McFarlane used influencers to such an extreme. And, you know, he had Ja Rule partnered with him. Right. And, you know, they totally understood that social media influencers were the way to get this whole ball rolling. That's you right. know, where they really fell down was, aside from the fact that McFarlane is a shady scammer, the number of regular tickets that they were selling compared to the number of high dollar tickets that they needed to sell was a huge problem. And so they had to jump in and say that the low price tickets were sold out. The only tickets you could buy were the high price tickets. You know, they had not provisioned in any way, shape, or form to actually create the venue. You know, 2 months before the event, they hadn't even really started working on the venue. You know, it was all just splash and no substance. And, right. you know, the people of the Bahamas, the government of the Bahamas is like, whoa, we this is not us. I mean, you know, and it's like one of the comments that somebody from the Bahamian government made was, you know, they're so close to the U.S. For the longest time, you didn't need a passport to get in and out of the Bahamas if you were a U.S. citizen. They have a lot of banks. They have a lot of connectivity. So, of course, they're the first stop on the shady train by people in North America, not just the United States. You know, I could say Calvin Ayers, you know, Bodog from Canada. He was there before he went to Costa Rica. So the poor people of the Bahamas are like, holy shit, you know, we didn't do this. We were defrauded as well. So McFarlane's in prison. And, yeah. you know, the Fyre Festival, why they spell it F-Y-R-E instead of F-I-R-E, I have no idea. But anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, it actually really magnetized the dark side of, like, influencer marketing. And, you know, why it's so popular using influencers is because it's an affordable way for businesses to gain reach and engagement to an audience that they are not otherwise being able to do without a larger budget to do so. So of all the accounts on Instagram, only 65% have over 10,000 followers or more. So, and that's the minimum required to get a web link to push anything, any product, anything you want.
Okay, wait. I have to tell you something. You're absolutely going to fall down and be like, what the hell?
Okay.
So I ran into, I've made the acquaintance of a person, very nice person. I'm not going to say who this person is. But this person only has like 1,000 Instagram followers, maybe, I don't know, 1,200 Facebook followers and not quite 5,000 Facebook friends, which is tiny. This is a tiny, 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 tiny number of followers. This person is getting like $8,000 a month.
Yeah, and how are they doing that? Because they have good quality followers, right?
I'm not entirely sure because I haven't really figured the whole thing out yet. I was just so gobsmacked to hear that, like, oh yeah, got 5,000 from this person. Oh yeah, got 1,000 for doing these posts. Oh, got free swag for doing that. And so, you know, I understand that when you get up into, like, say, the 10, 15, 100,000s, whatever, these are the way that it goes. But I mean, we're literally talking about a person that has almost no following whatsoever. And the relevance of what the person says, I have to admit, I've been kind of stalking the person. I'm just gobsmacked. So gobsmacked.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, a lot of these accounts that they're following or they can have reach, some of them are automated bots. I mean, Twitter's gone through that. They have a lot of automated accounts. A lot of fake user purge was resulted in a massive follower drop. Especially among a lot of the more popular influencers. But like a 10K followers is the minimum that you can start actually doing something with it. As an influencer, you charge $100 for
$100 for endorsing a product. The cost goes up from there.
No, this person got $5,000. That's the crazy part.
I know. That's amazing. That's amazing. It's like that 8-year-old who got like $26 million last year for being on YouTube.
Oh, the top two of the top 10 YouTubers are under 10 years old. Don't get me started there.
I know. So, you know.
You're wasting your son's life.
Hmm?
You're wasting your son's life. Why isn't he?
No, trust me. Trust me. He would love to do that.
Oh my God.
You know, 100 followers can earn you $2,000. While more influential influencers, those with more credibility, can earn $20,000. I mean, like you said before, Kendall Jenner received $250,000 just for one post about the Fyre Festival.
Oh, yeah, and her sister gets even more than that. It's crazy.
It's crazy. So right now we'll go through some of the red flags to better determine who to hire and endorse your product as an influencer. Small businesses tend to spend more on influencer marketing since 2010 than ever before because it creates an ROI when done right. So with Instagram being the go-to platform, 89% of marketers identify it as one of the important channels for influencer marketing. So another survey found that 34% of daily US Instagram users bought something because a blogger or influencer recommended it to them.
Jesus.
29% on Twitter, and on Facebook, 25% made the purchase based on influencer recommendation. So that's how huge this is.
Now, a combination of real and fake users is not uncommon.
Right.
The thing about it is you as the small business owner or the marketing person have to understand the costs, and you've got to do some investigation and check out the past behaviors on these influencer feeds. Take a look at the followers, look and see who's commenting, what they're commenting. You know, is this just an account that gets likes, 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 and no comments? Or is this an account that has actual interaction above and beyond the likes?
Right. And another way to spot these fake influencers, these fake accounts, is that many of them are based on real accounts with some minor yet significant enough changes as not to be detected by the bots. So the account names with an extra letter or an underscore, it's easy to miss these substitutions, like the letter L is replaced with an uppercase L.
Uppercase I.
Like the lowercase L is
replaced with an uppercase I.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a zero and an O.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Another one. Capital O, capital A, zero and a capital O. And, you know, it's really not uncommon for people to have their profiles, especially if they are influencers, to have their profiles, I'm going to call them appropriated. I'm not going to say outright stolen. But what ends up happening is in the guise of fan pages and fan clubs and tribute pages, things that are designed to, they're basically fake accounts, but they fit within the allowed terms and conditions of a Twitter or an Instagram. So in a way it is a stolen profile, especially when you start talking about copyright infringement where people are taking other images and using them in the profiles. But I mean, then again, what the hell kind of actual copyright enforcement is there on Instagram? I don't even understand. You know, it's like people take other people's images, they do a little color shifting, they compress them a little differently, they change the meta details. That's a good way to avoid an automated detection flag. Yeah. And this doesn't take a lot of time to do. And it is one way to convince the unsuspecting of the legitimacy of these accounts.
That's right. And it's not just happening on Instagram. It's happening on Twitter. The average user has around 200 followers with the fake account. And there's lots of following with, there's lots of them following with very few followers themselves. So that's another way to spot it. You know, they like to retweet, with bot accounts. So their posts include various topics in several languages. That's another way to identify it. Sometimes you'll find it in Arabic and Chinese. I know I was clearing out our Instagram feed as well, and I've come across quite a number of those. You know, sometimes the letters can be jumbled, like you were saying, by a number. There was word fragments instead of a name. You know, like you were saying, the zeros, the letter O, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, most of the accounts, most every account has some fake followers, whether it's celebrities, business leaders, politicians, athletes. I mean, it's almost impossible to have a completely genuine follower list. And even if you have the time to sit down and go through all the followers and call them out, you're still going to miss a few. I mean, it's hard and it takes a lot of time to really work on a genuine organic growth pattern for an account. And I mean, you know, for us, we have a lot of fresh content like this podcast, other strategies, things like that, that we do. So,
yeah. It's like we use this to reach more listeners in a variety of different channels. And we like to move all of them onto mobile. We encourage it. You know, it's real engagement because it trumps the fake ones. Anyway,
I know what you did there.
Oh, geez. I didn't even think of that when I wrote it. And it's, you know, it makes it really the difference between legit users and autobots in the long run, because as an influencer, you'll need to demonstrate authentic and measurable results.
Right. So, you know, if you are looking for social media influencers, either because you want to, for some reason or another, become an influencer, or you're a business and you want to use influencers, you've really got to take the time and do some educating yourself. You know, you got to go to the FTC website and start by downloading their guidance and read it. Don't just look at it, actually read it, understand what they're saying. Because, you know, when it comes to the point that somebody like the FTC comes after you, if you ever get that big, they are a ask questions second and act first sort of situation. So, you know, they freeze accounts, they freeze bank accounts, they freeze your mom's bank account, your husband's bank account, your kid's bank account, and they sort it all out later. So you really need to make sure that you don't run afoul of the FTC or corresponding government agencies in other countries.
Right. I mean, that's what you can do to be above board. Be sure your brand and its story are being seen in a positive light with the right people, putting trust in them and the brand. That's really the winning combination. Effectively, influencers create a network of trust bonded by common interests, views, and desires.
And although these social media influencers are really great to help you gain likes and follows, what are you going to do after that? You've got to remarket to the people who are engaged with you. I mean, there is no better list out there than your own curated list. And if you can put out a call to action and actually get someone to opt in to being email or mobile marketed, I mean, this is like a live body and you need to treat this person like gold. And, you know, creating a mobile channel that can not only connect all of your social media channels together, but also takes a person out of the realm of just being an Instagram follower or just being a Facebook follower, and actually puts them into a database that belongs to you and you alone, that you're not sharing with a platform, that you're not at the mercy of a platform changing their algorithms. You know, you can then send the right message at the right time by using good mobile strategies.
Right. And you said it well, a mobile channel allows your story to be told without fear that the message will get lost scrolling through a feed. I mean, have you seen Twitter? It's, you can't even remember what you looked at.
No, I don't do Twitter anymore. Yeah. I auto post to Twitter, just like I think almost everybody else auto posts to Twitter. And then there are the people who actually look at the stupid Twitter, and I'm not one of those people.
Right.
But I love Instagram. I like all of the art. I like all of the maker stuff. I mean, you know, that's like my whole entire side gig, sort of side interest is all making and creating and painting and sewing and fucking hand embroidering until all your fingers split.
Right, right. And that's how you use social media.
Yes, that is. Oh, yeah. Or maybe, you know, like a picture. We hiked Camelback Mountain the other day. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I do.
Right,
but I'm
not
selling eye makeup. I'm not selling magnetic lash extensions. I still don't understand how those work. Yeah, I'm kind of scared of the idea. Yeah.
Sure. So yeah, we tell our clients that once they're, you know, you get attracted to a post, you get that like, you get that follow, you can now, you know, go out into a mobile channel with them, have them download a pass, and you can see, they can see all the trends of all your activity, and it's easy to share.
Totally. So for more info on that, you can get in touch with us either on the podcast website, which is dominoresearch.com, or on the platform website, which is mobilewalletmarketer.com. Sorry, I had a momentary brain loss there. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, and you know, we've got plenty of ebooks, downloads, so much material to help you get started. You know, we're always available to answer questions, whether it's a call or an email. You can schedule an appointment. Hazel loves appointments. Schedule with her. You can do it on the websites. And I think that's probably all that we have for today.
Yeah. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome.